I work with farmers every day. They call me 704-975-3239. It's my cell phone number. They call me every day and ask me how to make their family farm stay in the family. And I just want to scream it from the rooftop. I know how to make it. I can help you. I see it every day. I help people every day. I know I'm making America great again by helping these farmers.
That's Jessie Johnson. She's a healthcare educator and consultant and founder of Purple Peace LLC. And she's also an industrial hemp research permit holder here in Pennsylvania. This is the Lancaster Farming Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Herlock. And on today's show, get ready for a fun, informative, wide-ranging conversation with Jessie about cannabis in America and how Purple Peace can help farmers become profitable by growing hemp. Hey, listeners. If you're not a current subscriber to Lancaster Farming Newspaper, now's your chance. We have a special deal for you. Just go to lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal for a discounted offer on the number one agricultural newspaper in the Mid-Atlantic region. So check it out, lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal. Okay, back to the show. Welcome to the Lancaster Farming Podcast. Could you introduce yourself for us?
Absolutely. My name is Jessie Johnson. I am the founder of Purple Peace LLC, which is a healthcare consulting firm. I have been in the cannabis space for about 12 years now. I started from the home care arena, and I recognize the need for cannabis regulation at the home level many, many moons ago. And I have been working every day towards that goal of making sure people feel comfortable in their own home and are provided the care that they request, you know, and that's the bottom line. So I started an agency, and that finally came to fruition with a name a couple years ago. And after touching the lives of over 100 individuals at the home care level, I learned that it's time to make this a nationwide effort. And as such, I have offices in Charlotte, North Carolina, Juneau, Alaska, Dallas, Texas, Sacramento, California, Weedville, Pennsylvania, which is intentional and absolutely effortless. And the last place that I have on my agenda is Charlotte, North Carolina, which is what I call home.
Okay.
And I don't know if you knew, but tobacco industries all profited out of Charlotte, North Carolina. So I get to exercise some of their pathways very much so. And we just recently seen how a bunch of them jumped on board with acquiring new licenses. And so it's just a matter of understanding really the direction of the business to understand how to make these mom and pop shops profitable, because it really is their experience and their expertise that these tobacco industries are exploiting in order for a profit. So let's just figure out how to make them money in the process too. And that's where I come in.
You're a permit holder here in Pennsylvania. So how did that come together, and what was your goal in getting the permit in Pennsylvania?
The goal today is the same as it was then, and that's unlimited acreages. And the only way that goal is accomplished is through a institutional partnership. And the farm bill is a huge thing, Eric. Everyone wants to talk about the farm bill. Everyone wants to think that this farm bill is the act of all acts. And having argued face to face with these senators and these congressmen and sneaking into these rooms just to answer their questions from an unbiased opinion. The reality of it is it's always going to be a state issue. It's always going to be dictated by the state.
Right.
And the state of Pennsylvania is the pilot program. What happens in Pennsylvania does happen in all 50 states. And the sooner you realize that, the sooner your profitability margins increase. And that's just from a business perspective. But from a public health perspective, which is where I come from, the sooner you realize Pennsylvania is the model, the faster you are to protecting the public. And if you look at California, which is always 2 weeks ahead of the East Coast, you see their regulations come down and how it impacts. So I chose Pennsylvania because it's the fifth largest state and it has the highest demand of healthcare. And if you look at Obamacare, or rather the Affordable Care Act, you will see that all authors are from the state. And if you look at the federal legalization of cannabis in the United States, you will too see that all authors are from the state. And it has everything to do with this being the pilot program. Pennsylvania is the only state in the entire nation that has effectively, year after year, demonstrated 100% control of diversion of a controlled substance, and that is alcohol. Alcohol is only purchased by one person in the Pennsylvania state, and that is Pennsylvania. No other state are you allowed as a business owner to purchase alcohol. And if you look at from our cannabis industry, our farming industry, where do we get our seeds? And the goal is to be from Pennsylvania, just like they do with their alcohol. So that's what we're looking at. That's the future that we're anticipating. And New York is an example of it, for sure. I'm working with a New York applicant right now, and she has everything that the state of New York needs in order to accomplish their goal. And that is research. And yet these huge organizations come in and they try to acquire the baseline of what research is, what commercialization of this product is. But yet I'm sitting here right now today talking to you in Pennsylvania out of Miami in this hotel called One Hotel. And everything in this hotel can be made out of hemp. And it's just a matter of having the right people to talk to the right people to understand the distribution channels. And once these distribution channels open up, then we're going to see a revitalization of our crop. Everything is going to be about the hemp plant. There's over 50,000 different uses. It's just a matter of time before we educate the masses on the legalities of the hemp plant in order for us to actually be profitable. So that's what I do every day, is I talk to these farmers. I talk to them in the drones, and I just want them all to know that I'm here to help you. I want everyone to know that you can provide a service to our industry that no one else can. And it starts with the plant. And so let's figure out how to not lock you in like they do in Europe and how to make you non-exclusive. So that's really my goal every day. I work with farmers every day. They call me 704-975-3239. It's my cell phone number. They call me every day and ask me how to make their family farm stay in the family. And I just want to scream it from the rooftop. I know how to make it. I can help you. I see it every day. I help people every day. And the only thing that I get in return is a smile on my face, because I know I'm making America great again by helping these farmers. And that really the my goal and why I have a permit in the pilot state for the federal United States. Like, this is the pilot program. This is the state. And if it was, if it wasn't for people like you that are broadcasting this nationwide, do they know that these, laws that prohibit our advertising and marketing, these laws prevent us from screaming it at every corner of the earth, that just because the pharmaceutical companies decided to fund a few politicians, did we have this, black sheep of an industry thrown on us? But I'm looking at all these products. There's nothing that hemp can't do. We're a nautical society. Cannabis starts with cannabis. Like, everyone knows that it's there. It's been around. But there's a lot of education that's missing, and that's why we're fighting every day to educate the masses so that we can, restore a recyclable, renewable, reusable energy source. And that is the definition of making America great again.
So tell me about your experience farming here in Pennsylvania. Where was it? How many acres did you grow? How involved were you in the nuts and bolts of the farming?
I was in Weedville, Pennsylvania. Weedville.
Which is where? Where? What county is that?
Elk County. Elk. The largest population of elk in the entire United States of America reside in Elk County, Pennsylvania. And they titled a whole county after these little animals. And they're not little, technically. They're very aggressive. And they do not like females. So they attack. And I've been chased down by a few of these.
Nice.
But nonetheless, it's Elk County, Pennsylvania. And it's called Weedville. And it's a little rural town that me and my partners out there, we have been buying up every piece of property that we can because we love the town. We love the name. And we're dedicated to bringing about 200,000 jobs to the area. And we will accomplish that goal. And I chose Elk County, Pennsylvania, because of Weedville. But more importantly, my experience in Pennsylvania, after 12 years of growing this plant all over the United States of America, I can tell you, Pennsylvania really made me pray. It really did, because I sat there looking at floods of water going over my feet into my crop last year, record-breaking, history-making rainfall in Pennsylvania last year. Mm-hmm. And here I am staring at my crop, and I have had the most, it cost me $112,000 cash to make sure my crop came out of the ground in Pennsylvania. The most expensive crop I've ever had in my entire 12 years was in Pennsylvania. Hmm. And the reality of it was, is just because there was a lot of rain, I had to make my field float, if you will. So we had to stop the rain because these ladies, they don't like the rain. They don't like a lot of wet. So you got to keep them dry and sandy and all of those things we help out. You know, we make sure the farmer understands. We go on about 3-4 weeks before we would ever put a seed down. And we talk to the farmer about the ground and we look at the topography and we understand the geography and we understand if this is going to be profitable or not profitable. And most farmers have plenty of farmland. So we pick the ones, the area that makes sense. And this area that we picked this past year, was in a valley, and it happened to have over 100 visitors a day to our farm without advertisement. Okay. We had a camera. We have 14 cameras at any given moment on our field. And there is literally every minute in June, did you see someone drive by our field? So I know based on that data alone that people want to learn. And that's my job. I need to educate. Everyone needs to educate, but me, I'm a certified educator. So I'm going to educate because that's what I took an oath to do. So bottom line is we have these fields all over the United States. I have over 100 acres scheduled. I have 3,000 acres technically planned for next year, but the state of Pennsylvania refuses to allow us to go over 100 acres unless we have an institutional partnership. I talked to a few of them. There's only 3 colleges in the entire state of Pennsylvania that have applied for an application to learn about our hemp plant. Only 3. Out of all of them, only 3.
So what's that? Del Valle, Penn State, and Thomas Jefferson?
No, not Thomas Jefferson. You'd think, right? Because they have the whole hemp, but that's all about money, dude. That has nothing to do with learning. That is all about community benefit so that we can get some license to grow marijuana, which is the cousin of hemp. And that all is just a facade, just to say, hey, give us more points on our community benefit scale because we donated $5 million to this college. That's nothing more than a shell. And that's what that is. That's what exactly what that is. You ask any researcher, any professor, any educator, what's going on in that building, and they're going to tell you nothing. And that's the answer. It's because it was nothing more than a facade. And it's unfortunate, but they're all over. for instance, Star Processing Inc., who is based in Pittsburgh, who is 100% capable of processing all of our hemp. But yet I submitted my NDA to them, my mutual NDA, and they crossed through all of the circumventions. And when I asked them about it, their response is, we're going to do this and we're going to do it at a larger scale. And my answer to them is, who are you going to learn from? And their response is you. And my, you know, like, okay, good luck with that. But it's like, you know, you don't pay to be a guinea pig in this industry. And yet all these big companies want you to be.
I want to go back to something you said a minute ago about that you're going to bring jobs to Elk County.
Oh, yes.
How many jobs do you want to bring there?
And that by 2020, I have projected 200,000 jobs. And it's because I'm from the Northwest. I know what manufacturing jobs look like.
Okay.
And this is exactly the jobs that we need. And the county is all in agreement. And our philanthropists out there are all in agreement. And it's all about, you know, actually implementing what you say you're going to do. So we have over 200,000 jobs planned.
I'm looking at the population of the county. There's only 30,000 people in Elk County. Where are you going to get the people from?
Oh my goodness. So surprisingly, a great amount of individuals are from Pennsylvania and want to come back to Pennsylvania, want to move home from Colorado, want to move home from Oregon. Mm-hmm. I have three companies that are based out of Pennsylvania, but yet operating in Oregon because of the laws. Hmm. And as soon as the laws open up that they can come back home, you know, they will, they want to. And that's what you're going to see. Like the biggest outcome of the Farm Bill is nothing to do with all this propaganda about, you know, oh, you can grow it too, you know, it's a cash crop too. It's always going to be a licensing situation. You're always going to have to operate under a license. So your farmers that farm, if they don't know the license holders, they don't get to farm, period. And anybody that sells you any of the other bull crap is just selling bull crap. Hmm. So nonetheless, the people that want to come home and get to know their politicians, get to know their license holders, and get to say, hey, I've been doing this work for years in Oregon, and I want to help Pennsylvanians do the same work, only on a slightly, you know, more, you know, entrepreneurial, you know, intellectual, you know, proprietary scale, then let's talk. Mm. But at the end of the day, it's called a weed for a reason. And, you know, that's just the bottom line. You have a permit in the West. Doesn't make you qualified to grow it in the East.
Right. So I was talking to the Secretary of Agriculture here in Pennsylvania about what the Farm Bill is going to mean for farmers here and the permit holders here and the pilot program. And he's pretty sure that the cap on permit holders and acreage is going to be lifted with this new Farm Bill. So that 100-acre cap, I think, is going to go away.
Yeah, and that's all the forest of the trees, Eric. That guy is saying, well, if our universities pay the money to be a part of the program, then they don't have to, you know, demand 100 acres on all of the permit holders that they do business with. It is not like a flip the switch, there's a light on, there's a light off, which is the propaganda you hear about when it comes to politicians. It's available, but there's so many hoops to jump through, you know, tunnels to crawl through, people to pay, and then all of a sudden you get to do what they all said you could do, and that is grow unlimited. So I talked yesterday, Monday, when I renewed my application, which happened to be the deadline for Pennsylvania,
right.
I renewed my application. I was on the phone with Penn State University, Alyssa Collins, PhD. Asked her, point blank period, what are the private partnerships you're engaging in and what do they look like? Because I wanna not only meet those expectations, but I wanna exceed. And her response was simple. None. So why was my response? And her answer was, we don't have the people in place to accomplish the goals. And so those things are all timely and they'll come. And yet Redding is out there saying, oh, and that's his job, you know, that's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to bring about economy to the state of Pennsylvania. And the reality of it is he gave, you know, our license holder, Penn State, which is the hugest, the biggest, the best, in my opinion, agricultural department is not yet entertaining the idea of working with private partnerships, which in a nutshell just means we have the money to make sure your dreams come true, but you have to jump through all of the hoops. And if you do it, we'll pay. And those are the partnerships. And so why can't you jump through the hoops? Because we don't have enough people holding the ring. That's the reality of it. So she's going to acquire more people next year. And then next year, will we entertain the idea of doing a private partnership with the state of Pennsylvania? But that's not a guarantee. So when it comes to unlimited acreage, no. It has everything to do with the way the law is written. And the law is written to state, if we're not in a partnership with one of the license holders that is also an institution of higher learning, which in our case is three, then we don't get unlimited acreage. So
interesting.
That's the problem.
And you don't think the Farm Bill is going to change any of that?
No, the Farm Bill gave us the option of partnering with institutions. The Farm Bill 2018 does not require institutions to partner with us.
Right, but Pennsylvania requires that.
Most states require. There's some outliers, like Tennessee, for instance. There's no rule in Tennessee. If you can grow in Tennessee, then you can make a money and you can pay the state of Tennessee to grow, then by all means, grow in Tennessee. And that's something we can do. We can move to Tennessee and we can start paying them our tax dollars and we can start growing on their farmland. But why? Pennsylvania is better than Tennessee in all sense of the word. Not only are we bigger, but our climate is better. Our business taxes are better. Our regulations are more public focused. And there's no reason to go to Tennessee, you know? But yet we could if we wanted to. And those people that do are called license chasers, individuals chasing these licenses in order to acquire the infrastructure to charge Wall Street a share, you know, and it's about $10,000 a share at this age. So, you know, by the end of the year, next year, we're looking at about $100,000 a share. And those are all because we have less than 10,000 individuals in the United States of America holding onto a license to grow. I'm one of them. And I can tell you, it costs every damn dime to hold one of those licenses. And if you don't know how to farm, if you don't know how to distribute, if you don't know how to manufacture, then you're not going to be successful. So what I've designed is a team of specialist after 12 years, that there's not one seed that goes in the ground that we don't know the buyer. We don't know where it's going. And most farmers can't do that today with their soy or their corn or their hay. You know, there's ideas, but there's no guarantees. And that's what I want to offer to everyone, that my pre-planning, my preparation, you know, my protocol states, if there's not a buyer, we don't do the work.
Right.
And the work simply says farm. And farmers know how to farm. So why not get them on board with farming a crop that's similar to corn, but takes a little more love, because she is a female, let's be clear here. And she just will perform every time for you if you prepare and you align with the right people.
So do you see hemp or cannabis as a disruptive force in healthcare or as sort of an ancillary industry?
Good question. I have a master's in healthcare administration, and I'm formally trained to run a healthcare organization like a hospital, and CMS made it crystal clear that you have to have an MHA in order to accept CHS dollars, CMS dollars. And I can say that law was intended to make sure the community didn't benefit from the community planned, and that is cannabis. Cannabis is such a disruptor. There is nothing that the cannabis plant can't do that all our pharmaceuticals are striving to achieve. And that's a guarantee. That is a guarantee. I have spent a lifetime working to proving that fact. And I can't find a single individual, single company, single organization that has the ability, let alone interest, to challenge that question. Is what can our hemp plant do that can't do that you can? And it's a very interesting, and I'm not, just because I'm a farmer doesn't mean that I'm like trying to promote this plant. It's I'm fiscally responsive. I am the most responsible individual you'll ever meet. And it has everything to do with, if I don't put my dollar down, you sure as hell shouldn't. And the question is I'm formally trained in healthcare, and yet you're devising drugs that do what this health, like you're looking at the same data that I'm looking at. There's 95 patents in the United States government. The CDC has 95 patents that our hemp plant cures, and we're not allowed to use that word. We get federal charges held against us for using that word, and yet you have 95 patents that state that it does it. And it's just like, why does that make sense? And the response is simple. Who's paying for it? And Epidiolex, that's one of the 95 patents. That's the 95th patent. They bought it from us. And if you track through the history, you'll see how much they paid so that they can take one of our patents on cannabis and then turn around and sell it to us for $35,000 a gram. And yet, if you go to California, the same product is $60 a gram.
So what should people know about the hemp plant? In your opinion, what are they missing in the overall hemp story here?
Okay, the biggest thing that I get calls about every day, Eric, every freaking day, can I do it without a permit? The answer is no. Please, please scream it from the top of the highest mountain. You cannot grow it without a permit. You will never grow it without a permit. If you do, you're jeopardizing yourself and your family. Please don't do that. The response is, call someone with a permit. Everything is public knowledge. Look on your internet. Call your Department of Agriculture. Find the permit holder. Ask them if you can grow with them. And 90% of the time, you're going to hear the word yes, because they know that you're growing and that you're a grower and that you might offer some diversity that we can't. So yes, the answer is yes, grow with us, but don't grow alone. You will not be successful. In fact, most of your shit will be seized. And I can show you numerous clients of mine that called me after the fact. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this for 12 years, numerous acres. Hundreds of thousands of acres have been seized by the federal government because you didn't pay your state representative. So do not grow without a permit is my first and only scream from a mountain. Okay, you can't tell the difference between marijuana and cannabis. Okay, because there is none. Cannabis is marijuana. Cannabis is hemp. When someone sees a cannabis plant, they think you're getting high from it. And you can't get high from a hemp plant, yet the police department doesn't know what a hemp plant looks like and what a marijuana plant looks like, because a rose of the same color is nonetheless a rose. So you have to understand that educate yourself on the agronomy of the plant before you try to make a cash profit off of it, because karma is the same thing that our plant is, a female, and she will bite. So do not produce a cannabis plant without a permit is my first and foremost. The other thing is you have an ability to grow, and I want to know. And that's why I started my consulting firm, is because I can take care of the patients every day, but it wasn't until I seen the disruption in the supply chain did I understand that the farmers needed education too. So let me educate. I do 30 minutes. You know, I talk a lot. I don't know if you noticed, but I talk a lot. And in 30 minutes, I can educate you on your path. If I can't fix your problem, no one can. And that's a guarantee. After 12 years, talking with the right people, having a permit in this property, like, it is clear that I know how to make you profitable. But anybody can grow it. Not everyone can sell it. You have to know the compliances and the protocols in place in order to make yourself profitable so that you can grow it again the next year. And that's what my team thrives on. I'm in a hotel right now that is completely made out of 100% recyclable products. And there's no reason that this isn't a multi-billion dollar contract for a hemp client. Like, literally, I'm growing 3,000 acres. They can, and I have a Bruce Bennett that is the only guy that can spin hemp fiber into a workable product, a finished product. Like, this is the exact kind of mentality that we're looking for. And if you're growing out there and you have these equipment and you have all of the ability and the desire to report, and you're a Purple Peace client, you know, you're very much, let me turn your 1 acre 700 max on corn into a 7,000 max on hemp any day of the week.
Wow.
All you need is the right people. And, you know, and that's not very forthright. And so that's what my goal is. That's why I'm doing all of this, is I want everyone to know that we can help you and we can keep the family farm, the family farm. Hmm. And that is my goal.
Cool.
And that's Purple Peace's goal.
Question again about something you said earlier. You've been farming hemp for 12 years. Is that right?
Growing hemp, I would say growing cannabis.
Growing cannabis. Okay.
In 1996, the state of California allowed medical marijuana.
Oh, okay.
In 1996. And it wasn't for a little mongrel named Lisa, who had epilepsy, did they pass medical marijuana in 1996 in California.
Okay. Yeah. I hadn't realized it was that long ago.
Yeah. Most people don't. And it's all because of the laws. Like, the laws written then are the same laws written now. You may not advertise or market. And think about it. Have you ever not advertised or market your own abilities? And what is the outcome of that?
So what should farmers be doing now to prepare themselves?
Don't grow soy. I know it sounds weird, but don't do it, because your acid in your soy plant is preventing me from putting my hemp plant on your property. So don't grow soy. And the other thing is, how to prepare for it is to simply call your Department of Agriculture and ask them if there is an interested party in working with them. Just ask the question. And if you did that in any of the states that Purple Peace is working in, you will hear the response of yes, and you will get my cell phone number. Because every single state, I'm looking to educate the farmers, because right now there's no budget to educate farmers. So those department heads aren't going to educate you. There's no time. There's no talent. There's sure as hell no treasure. And I can tell you that if it wasn't for you know, me educating individuals who educate individuals who educate individuals, then it would not be where it is today. And that is the same story spoken among a lot of the mentors I look up to.
Hmm. Who were some of your mentors?
Well, one of them, my favorite, is Joy Beckerman. She is in New York. She's a little hemp guru. She cracks me up because she can just do anything in the world. She's like the MacGyver of hemp. It just cracks me up. She's like, you need a blanket? I got your blanket. You need a toothpick? I got your toothpick. You need a hat? I got your hat. She's like, she cracks me up because she can put together anything in a matter of moments. Joy is her name, and it's suiting. The other hemp guru is Gloria Costello. Gloria is one of the first females to ever sit at the Hemp Industries Association. And she is of Spanish descent. And she has the Latino farmers in the back of her hand. And every time I have a stressful moment where my farmers quit or my farmers think that the hay costs are much more valuable because they're consistent. Let's be clear there. We have the same people buying the same products year after year. So let's devote the time and energy to that kind of crop. Here comes Gloria to the mix, and she just reminds people that you can be you and you can do the same thing over again, or you can make a little more money trying something new. And if you don't do it, she'll bring on an intense fleet of Latino farmers that will do it for us.
Wow.
And that's my favorite thing about Gloria, is that she gives me the safety net of educating our American farmers to farm for America. And if they choose not to believe me, if they choose the propaganda and, you know, the oil companies and their ethanol and corn, you know, at the end of the day, if you can't eat the corn, you might as well grind it up and make it into ethanol oil. You know, those guys are still there. They'll buy it from you for the pennies on the pound. And I charge $4.20 a pound, FYI, and 1% for every CBD you get. So it could be a minimum of $14.20 a pound per bale of crop that these corn guys, you know, are paying 20, 30 cents a pound. So, you know, they're oil companies and they're consistent and, you know, kind of thing. But nonetheless, Gloria cracks me up because she has always been the safety net. And so she's one of my mentors. The other one is Richard Rose, who is the first guy to ever have a hemp license in the state of Canada, or the country rather. And he is the smartest guy I know. He likes to say, I'm the consultant. Your consultants consult with before consulting. And it's true, because I'm a business consultant and I consult with him before consulting. And it is because he knows exactly the costs associated with the act. And I have the idea in the contract that they're willing to pay if you do the act. And he says, well, if that doesn't work out, this guy will pay this. And I really enjoy those kind of guys, for sure. Without being much said, is if you grow with us, we will have an outlet for you, and we will make sure you're as happy with us as you are with the next guy, or you don't have to stay with us. And that's the uniqueness of Purple Peace, is we are the only ones, absolutely the only ones, that refuse to assign an exclusivity clause. And you ask everyone else in the Pennsylvania market, you ask everyone else in the European market, who are you tied to? And the response is always a name. And in my case, if it's not a color, then I don't want to deal with it. It's purple peas. And if you can't remember purple peas, then you're not growing the right plant. Because at the top of every plant, there is a color purple. And the only time when you see that color purple, do you know that you're actually making money off that plant, that she's happy and she produced you a color. And that color is when you cut her down and you make money off of that plant. And so purple peas has many ties to it. But point is we can't be profitable without a color purple.
Where do you see things in 10 years? Where's the cannabis industry going to be in 10 years?
The cannabis industry in 10 years is going to look like, let's say, I don't want to say plastic, but I will say that plastic has done a wonderful job in the last 10 years than any other material on earth. There's campaigns today to prevent plastic. So I can say that the hemp plant is on the same trajectory. It's 10,000 times stronger than cotton, than nylon, than plastic. And if you are in an exclusivity agreement with one of the less than 10,000 farmers able to produce hemp, then you created an empire. You created a monopoly. And so that's where I see it going. If, because every state gets to choose. Pennsylvania allows 50. All right. I've been in states that allow 10. I've seen it where it's only 25. And we're at 50. So it just matters on who is allowed to produce and what skill set they have. So where does hemp go in 10 years? You know, with the right amount of grant money, the right amount of entrepreneurship and philanthropy, we will see hotels like the one I'm standing in, like One Hotel, which is in Miami and New York, and it's all based on renewable. All right. Like, this hotel is exactly what hemp will look like in the future. It's just a matter of aligning with the right people and making sure your distribution channels are in place before you even set to grow. Don't be scammed. Don't let these guys come into you and say, hey, guess what? I can make you a cash crop. I can make you a millionaire in the next 5 years. I can do this. You just have to do what I ask you to do. Don't let those guys confuse you. It is all about planting the right crop, understanding the cost, and knowing the distribution channel that, be smart about it, and you will be profitable too. And that's what I really want people to know. Like, in the farming industry, I get calls every day. 14,000 acres here, 3,000 acres here. That's more land than anybody has ever grown in hemp. But yet, it's never going to change. People are going to come to the table every day with more and more acreage, because what I told my first client as a business consultant is the same thing I tell my last clients as a business consultant. You want to control the cannabis industry, you own the land. If you don't own the land, you don't own the cannabis industry. There's only one thing that we need in the cannabis space, and that's land. So I have over 1 million acres to date. And It sounds just, fictitious in nature, but I have 1 million acres, and it's growing every day because I intend to control the land. I intend to make sure that if there's a market, it's one that I created. Mm-hmm.
Does hemp have a role to play in mitigating climate change?
That's a good question. I would leave it up to the experts. I've had enough conversations with them to say my money's on yes. You know, I'm a betting woman. I would say I got my money on yes. And yet you never know, because I don't control the industries. I don't control the manufacturing hubs. I don't control Kraft or Ford or Chevrolet or Dodge. I don't know who is putting out what emissions at what time. So I do not know the answer. But what I do know is that my plant has certain properties that most plants don't. And if we put these plants in large amounts all over the world, given their properties, I guarantee you we're going to see numbers that no one else has seen in the world. No other country has had the ability to witness. And it's because we're the only ones that can control it as well as profit from it. And that's a guarantee.
Jesse Johnson, thank you very much for talking to me today.
You're very welcome, Eric. I love talking. And if you want to talk to me more, we can talk some more all the time.
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening to our show today. It's been a great pleasure to talk to Jesse Johnson from Purple Peace LLC, purplepeace.com. Happy New Year, everybody. It's 2019. Can't wait to see where this year goes. I am Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming. Send me an email to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. And until next time, I will see you in the newspaper.